Welcome to the Web3 Artist Spotlight, the podcast that shines a spotlight on talented artists who are leveraging Web3 technology to sell their art and connect with collectors in new and innovative ways. Through in-depth interviews, we learn more about the artists behind the art and uncover their unique creative processes, inspirations, passions, and the stories behind their captivating artworks. From seasoned professionals to emerging talents, we bring you a diverse range of voices from the Web3 community, and we delve deeper into how blockchain technology, NFTs, and decentralized platforms are revolutionizing the art industry.
Amber Vittoria is an abstract artist, poet, and author whose art is widely recognized both in and outside the Web3 space. Her art can be found on multiple brand partnerships, as well as digital, physical prints, and original artworks. Apart from that, her marketing approach to her brand is admired and emulated by many in this space. And with that, Giancarlo and I welcome Amber Vittoria to the stage.
Thanks so much for having me. That was such a nice intro. I need you to do that for me every time I meet
you
new people.
You got it, Amber. Just send me a pin. I'll be there.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to be hanging out with you guys today.
All right. Love it. Love it. So, Amber, we typically do kind of like interview style questions, but then at the end, you know, if we have some time, we'll also just open it up for people that are in the audience if they want to come up and ask a question or let us know how they're doing. So we'll kind of play it out that way. First thing I wanted to ask you about was, I love the back. So I did a lot of research on your collections, your backstory and all that. And one thing that I loved was this backstory behind your Gio Vittoria collection. And I was kind of reading through that, and it mentions that like you and your father, Giovanni, who was an accountant, both realized that in addition to having like similar personalities and idiosyncrasies, his personal sketchbook had like a lot of the same energy and spirit of your artwork, right? And then you went on to create this series of like 5 paintings together, and you described it on OpenSea that it was like the most meaningful collaboration of your life. So I'd love it if you could share with us a little bit more about the relationship with your father and why that collection means so much to you.
Oh, I love that. Yes, my dad and I are very similar people. My mom always jokes. She's like, I don't know how I gave birth to you because you're essentially your dad. My dad, I mean, everyone in both sides of my family, my mom's side and my dad's side, are very creative. On my mom's side, a lot of folks would sing. I cannot sing well. Then on my dad's side, my dad did a lot of drawing. My uncle did a lot of drawing, and they just never pursued it as a career. I think, you know, especially in that time, you know, being an artist, people would be like, how do you support yourself? And even though that trope still lives today, I think that was definitely a little bit more prevalent back then. So my dad is always like, whenever he's on calls for work, he will, especially during the pandemic, he would like doodle in his like notebook. And then as the pandemic let up, he texted me one day a painting that he made just like in his free time. And I was like, whoa, Dad, that's really bizarre because I have a sketch in my sketchbook for a painting that I want to do that's essentially the same thing. I was like, we should just do that together. And it's just really exciting to kind of be on the same wavelength at the same time. So I feel like, you know, that's, we haven't lived together in a very long time. So I think it was really special. So I've since moved to LA, but when we made this, I lived in New York City. So it was only like 2 hours from them. And when I came home, for like a long weekend, we painted these 5 pieces together and dropped them as an addition. And I have all 5 of the paintings, and they're just really special to me. A lot of my art marks different points in my life. And when I look back on that artwork, I remember kind of who I was at that time. And these 5 pieces in particular, I really love because it reminds me of spending time with my dad, and I'll be able to have those forever, which is really lovely.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that. And I think it's so cool how like we could go on for like our whole lives, you know, and you know, have a relationship with like people like our parents or, you know, cousins or whatever. And then even like later on in life, still discover like, oh, wow, you know, there's like other similarities or things that we have that we didn't even realize. So I think that's so cool. And like that's, you know, just kind of spoke to me a lot, like kind of reading through that and so neat that you guys like connected on that wavelength and created that artwork. And that now it's like a kind of a special thing that marks that time. So man, that's lovely.
Thanks. Yeah. It's definitely one of my favorites. So this is a good reminder for me to get them framed. I'm terrible at framing things. I love collecting art. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'll frame that in a decade. So this is a good reminder to put that back on the to-do list. Even though I get most of my frames from Amazon, they actually sell pretty good frames, especially if it's standard size, but I need to do that. So this worked as a great reminder.
I have the same problem. I'm literally sitting right now and like, I think I have like 7 or 8 like prints and things that I need to get framed. And it's like on my to-do list. I just have not gotten to it yet. So guilty of that as well.
That's why I love prints or like paintings on paper, because you could store them pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh yeah, I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. So next thing I wanted to ask you was, so I listened to this Carly P. Rylight podcast episode that you were on. And one of the things that you mentioned in there was that at around age 11 was when you kind of really found your love of art and also started considering it as a career option and really kind of leaning in that direction. And you mentioned that like later in high school, you actually had teachers that had worked, one of them had worked as an illustrator for DC Comics, another one as a designer for IBM, and that they actually helped share with you like steps on how you could make art a career. And I thought that was so cool, because kind of like that, going back to like the point you were making about like your parents, right? Like a lot of times people just discourage pursuing art as a career and just point out like, you know, the reasons why you will fail or not be able to succeed, as opposed to like actually telling people, well, here's how you can actually make that happen, right? So I thought that was such a cool thing. And my question for you was like, I guess, what message do you have for kids, you know, teenagers, kids, young adults who love art, or the parents of those kids, about how they can pursue art as a career now, based on everything that you've done and what you know, what you've accomplished so far?
That's a great question. My two teachers from high school were incredible, Mr. A, Mr. Colucci, both of whom are now retired, which is wild. I'm like, they weren't that old when they taught me, and I am not that old, but that is fine. They were both really incredible because they had different types of careers within art, and they would also bring in people that they were friends with that had different careers in art. And even learning photography in high school, like photographers would come in. So it was really nice because it was more of an abundance mindset of like, there are so many ways to become an artist, and like you could kind of figure it out. It's, you don't have to paint portraits of people. I mean, if you want to, that's awesome. But like, you know, you don't have to paint portraits of people, or you don't have to, you know, make a painting and then try to sell it and then make another painting and try to sell it. Like there's so many ways to, you know, put your work out in the world. And I was really lucky to have that from those teachers. Because I did have other teachers like in math and in science were like, oh, like, why would you waste your talent in math and science on art? Like, at least you could have a career in math and science. And I was like, I only like math and science because I'm good at it as a 16-year-old. And you're not going to be good at something for forever, because the whole idea of like higher education and then working on something new is, you know, challenging yourself and doing things that are hard. And if I only enjoy being good at it, I'm going to hate my life as an adult. Whereas with art, I've made so many terrible paintings and so many terrible things, and I still love it. You know, I don't love wasting canvases, but that's life. So that was kind of that differentiator. So I really love the fact that I had that positive encouragement in school. I was very lucky to also have it at home, but I think it's nice to have it outside of your family as well, for, you know, other adults that you look up to. My advice, I guess, like, this is not really advice, but my thoughts on for folks that are younger that want to become artists, I think it's so exciting because, similar to when I was younger, like the rise of digital art and making artwork on a computer was becoming more mainstream, for lack of a better term. Like, it was more accessible for people to be able to make art on a computer. And now we're starting to see the accessibility even expand using AI and then like 3D rendering and then eventually augmented reality and virtual reality. And so I think that even though right now we might be quote unquote limited to still physical ways of art or like very entry-level ways of making digital art, like the beautiful thing is like as you grow older, like that landscape is going to completely change. And then you could, your job as an artist in like 10, 15, 20 years probably doesn't even exist. And like, that's awesome. Like the thought that I could like log on to the internet and like connect with people on a thing called social media when I was like 15, like that wasn't really a thing. Like I think Facebook was kind of new and MySpace was the thing. And like, you had no idea what the internet was going to become. And I think that's the most exciting thing. So if you're an artist and you're like, I don't really know, like, I think I haven't figured myself out yet. Like, that's awesome. Like, embrace that because it's going to continually change. And that's really exciting. So that's what I would say.
Love that. That's so cool. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the landscape is changing so much, but I think with that, it's going to create a lot of other opportunities, right? With like the advent of all these different tools and what's going to be needed. And so I think if you are creative, it is a great time to be alive and be able to capitalize on that. So no, I love it. And another question I had for you were there any like artists and or creative works that maybe inspired you and helped shape the abstract style of art that you create today?
My knee-jerk answer before you finished the question was like, I love Bob Ross. Not abstract at all. But the idea of, I guess I feel like every 90s kid loves Bob Ross. But the idea of like painting for the joy of it was something that really resonated with me as a kid. And then in terms of abstraction, it's really awesome to see artists that are more well known for their abstract work, like Mark Rothko. And I guess even, I mean, Picasso still did a lot of like figurative work, but like it grew more abstract as he grew older. I think it was really nice to learn, especially taking our history classes, that you don't have to stick with like quote unquote one style. I think a lot of times when we see art shows in like galleries or museums and it's like a curation of an artist's work, you're like, oh wow, this is their style, like this is what they made. But then like, if you were to dive into their work chronologically, you'd see that they would evolve. And I think that's what's really inspiring to me, is that you are changing as a person as you grow older and your artwork could change too. So my younger work or earlier work, I'm not that old, but my earlier work was more figurative, and then it slowly became more abstract figurative, and then it became fully abstract. Like the little vibe profile picture that I have, that collection of vibes, is one of the first pieces that I've done in a long time that has a nod to any sort of like figurative element with the eyes. So I think that's been inspiring to see artists that have come before me that heavily made figurative work, and then in later in life transition to abstract work. It kind of gives you the permission to be able to change as you grow too.
I love that, Amber, so much. And apart from not being sort of pigeonholed into a particular artistic style, you are also a poet. I read some of the poems from your book. These are my big girl pants. In particular, What a Gem, Juggling the Feelings I Caught, and the poem that is on the back of the book, Boxing Up My Sunshine, were ones I deeply resonated and related to. I was hoping you might read one of those or one of your favorites, and if you could perhaps share with us what inspired you to express the message and feelings contained in the poem that you select.
Yeah, let me go get my book. I'm in the kitchen right now. That's probably why I'm echoing a little bit, but it has the best internet. But yeah, I think when it comes to, and if you lose me for a second, it's just because the Wi-Fi in our house is mediocre. But the inspiration behind a lot of my poetry was actually born out of the fact that a lot of the titles of my artworks were very lengthy and very descriptive, because as my work grew more abstract, I still wanted to give people a jumping off point into like how I feel about my own work. I love when people interpret my work in their own way. But sometimes abstract work can be a little bit intimidating. So I always like to kind of give people a jumping off point. And then over time, the titles just started to become poetry. And I was really fortunate that a friend of mine, Jason Naylor, he's also an artist. He's based in Brooklyn. His work's really colorful and vibrant and very positive. He had a book of his work, and I asked, I was like, hey, like, how did you do that? He was really nice to help me along that journey. And that was, you know, like three, four years ago now. So I was, you know, really, really fortunate for that. But anyway, you said the, which poem would you like me to read, or does it not matter?
Whichever you'd like. I mean, I do have the ones that sort of stood out to me, which were, These Are My Big Girl Pants, What a Gem, or Juggling the Feelings I Caught.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if I could find that really quickly. Anyway, I'll read one of my favorites first, and then as we continue talking, I could find the others. So one of my favorites is actually on page 12, for those that have the book, for those that don't, totally fine. It's called Creating a Diamond. Creating a diamond. If you want to be a diamond baby, you need to survive the pressure. Thank goodness then that there are other things I'd rather be. And this was written, I'm trying to think of one specifically. I think it was like right around the beginning of the pandemic. And there being a freelancer, especially like in the commercial art world, like there always feels like this pressure to like grow and to have more followers and to get bigger collaborations and like to hire a team of people. And sometimes you forget that there are other avenues to being an artist, even though that's an obvious thing. You're just like, oh, I guess I have to do this because this is what people are saying I should do. And then it adds a lot of pressure and you're like, actually, no, like I'm going to remove myself from that narrative and I'm going to do what makes me happy. Like I don't need to have a team of people. I just want to sit and paint and log on the internet and like chat with people that resonate over my work and over other artists' work. And like, that's it. And if I could support myself, then like, great. So that is what inspired that poem. It was very much about like, you know, like I don't need to be a diamond, you know, for lack of a better comparison. Like I could be another gemstone as long as I'm happy with what I am. And that's all that matters. I don't need to subject myself to that pressure if it doesn't feel right for me. Nothing wrong if it feels right for you. But it doesn't have to feel right for you, and that's okay. So that's what inspired that piece.
Love that. Love that insight into what inspired it. And it made me think of the other one, actually, What a Gem, because it's also referring to like a precious stone. But in that particular one, I actually experienced that exact same thing where I like, I think I shared a photograph of me. And somebody commented like, how come you're not smiling? And I was like, well, because I mean, I can't possibly smile all the time and nor should I, you know? And so when I read that, I was like, ah, she knows the feeling, of having to sort of have this, almost like a performative, front that they, I think is expected from people, but especially women. So that one, I like how it ties to what the one that you just read as well.
Yeah, I mean, you touched such an important part to the aspect of like being performative. I've given a lot of thought to that, obviously, when I wrote that poem, but then also just like over the years, I think that to an extent, I guess we're all performing a little bit, you know, depending on, you know, who we're talking to. And I think our most real selves when we're around people that we don't have to perform. But I definitely do feel like, I mean, the quote from the Barbie movie for folks that have watched that, the America Ferrera monologue, I think it's like a 2-minute monologue, really kind of touches on that, like this duality of like, you have to perform. And even when you do, it doesn't feel like it's enough. That is something that I feel like I struggle with a lot. I think a lot of women struggle with, especially in professional spaces, especially like when I'm doing commercial art, like, you know, you might be having a rough day, but then like you have to put on a happy face and like go out and like sell the thing that you helped make with this brand. And you're like, oh, this is the last thing I want to do. Or even in Web3, I think that Web3 is definitely a space where I feel like I could be my closest to my most real self without having to perform, which is huge. But there is still elements of having to perform in this space. You know, like I think when you touched on gender, I think there is still, you know, a disparity within Web3. But I think that it's a step closer to being able to feel a little bit more comfortable being yourself, which is great. So that's why I think I have like been gravitated towards and like latch on to people in this space, because even in the like slow times, you know, when everyone dropped off, the people that still stuck around, like a lot of them were just really lovely and to, you know, you felt comfortable being yourself. So, I had a lot of thought around the idea of being performative and trying to actively be less performative as much as you can. Obviously, you know, sometimes you have to put on a little bit of a, you know, a mask for certain situations, but I'm really fortunate that this space kind of allows me to be just like slightly closer to who I am when I'm around like my husband or my friends and things like that. So that's really nice.
That's awesome. And I'm really happy to hear that. And for folks in the listening audience, I went ahead and pinned up to the Jumbotron the book, which is available. And you could see Amber actually flipping through it if you press play on the video. And so it's not just poetry, and you touched on this before, but each poem is paired with a work of art. And I know that you mentioned that it had the titles of the poetry, and the poetry itself came from the lengthy titles that you would give your art. And so I guess my question then is, when you make the artwork, do you sort of have the title in mind, or does that come afterwards, or how did those two relate to each other?
It will depend on the piece. When I was younger, especially being in like design school, I went to Boston University's College of Fine Arts and I studied design. A lot of our projects then were very idea driven. So you would come up with the idea and then the process would be in service to the idea. And that's how I thought that you had to work. I mean, it also makes sense as a designer when I first started working full time, and now a lot of my illustration work lives within, and my artwork lives within design constructs, whether it's like on clothing or in print or whatever. It makes a lot of sense. You get a brief, or you come up with a brief, and then the process of making the art serves the idea. And over time, it took me a long time to unlearn that. Sometimes you want to make for the sake of it, and like you can't fully put words to the feeling or the vibe. Well, I use vibe way too much, so sorry. And the feeling that you have that you can't really put words to, so you start making it. And then that painting, you start to have kind of this conversation with that painting or piece, however you work. And then that is kind of where the words will start to come from. So I'd say a lot of my earlier work, I had the idea and I had the poem, and then I would make the artwork to go with that. And then as I've grown as an artist and I've grown older as a person, a lot of the times I just start a painting. Like majority of my paintings, at least in the last 6 months, like I've started them. And then as I've painted through them, the idea that I was trying to get out starts to become a lot more clear. So I guess it's more similar to sculpture in that way, where it starts off a little bit vague. And then as you chip away, it starts to become a lot more specific. So I don't think there's really a wrong way to do it, but I remember being younger and learning, like, you have an idea and then you make an artwork, you have another idea and then you make another artwork. And I don't think it has to be as clean cut as that. And that took a lot of unlearning for sure.
I really enjoyed hearing that. And I'm happy that you got to that point. You know, like, it's nice to hear about the evolution in the process of an artist. So thank you for sharing that, Amber.
Yeah. And it's funny, I can relate to that. And I was just thinking about it because when I create art, I do both sometimes. Like sometimes I'll have an idea or something that like sparks inspiration, and then I'll be like, okay, I want to create that. But there's other times where it's just like, I'll just start making something, and then like almost like it starts to take form or shape as I'm creating. So it's cool to hear that for you. You know, you had that kind of like training, and you followed a certain process, and now you've like, you know, open yourself up to other ways of creating. And it's so cool, you know, that, you know, as artists, as creatives, people can, you know, we can explore new ways of how we approach our process. So that's really neat. All right. So next question I had for you, Amber, was so I was in, back in so I know in October of 2022, you had a 101 piece titled "Understanding Our Dreams: Sell for a Record 30 ETH to MoonPay," and then you became their very first artist in residence, and you also then later went on to launch the beautiful Untitled collection with them. I was curious if you could share a little bit more about that experience and how has your partnership been with them since then?
Yeah, so that was really fun. That was like the latter half of 2022. And I think it was really special because having come from a commercial background and still very much doing a lot of commercial artwork, and to have different companies or brands collect fine art from artists is something newer to me. I thought that was really amazing that they not only collected my work, but then also gave me this opportunity to be an artist in residence. The woman that I work most closely with, Kayla, has since moved on from MoonPay, and she was incredible. Just to be able to bounce ideas off of her, and then at Art Basel in 2022, I keep wanting to say last year, but we're in 2024. Yeah, I'm like, I guess a year and change, it's not that long, but to be able to kind of see my work come to life and their pop-up that they had with NFT Now was really exciting. And then also to have a collection that I left untitled and that ended up becoming the title in itself. I think that was a nice push for me too, to be able to be given that space to do something like that. Because like we just talked about, a lot of my work is very driven by the title and or the poem that goes with it. And that as a conversation in itself. So it's nice to just have something that was just visual and there was no assistance in terms of the title. So it was a really fun collaboration. So I really loved working with them, and hopefully they'll continue to, you know, work with other artists and do other drops / artists and residencies, just because it was a really, really amazing time.
Very cool. And yeah, and I gotta say, I do love those pieces a lot, and did think it was neat that you could, you know, you were able to leave it untitled and completely up to the, you know, interpretation of the person looking at the artwork. So wanted to comment on that. And then of course, you know, and you hit a little bit on this earlier, but last month, you know, you did launch a collection on OpenSea called Vibes, and you are sporting that now. One of your vibes as your PFP. It does consist, what is it, 300 abstract pixelated artworks, and you mentioned that it's an ode to the multifaceted nature of human emotion. And one thing that I loved is that you did, you know, that you assigned like no rarity traits so that every emotion and expression could be valued just the same. So I thought that was such a cool thing, because I feel like in society, a lot of times, like, we tend to value certain emotions or expressions over others, right? But when in reality, all of them are equally important, right? It is important for us to sometimes maybe feel, you know, sadness or anger, and not necessarily have to be happy or smiling all the time, like Jenny alluded to a little bit before, right? In terms of those expectations and the fronts that we have to put up. I would love if you could tell us a little bit more about the collection, about Vibes, and what it means to you and the process you use to create it.
Yeah, Vibes is one of my favorites, I would say. I'd say earlier last year, I was chatting with a toy company, and it's been on the bucket list to make a toy. I didn't know what. I was like, one day I'll make a toy, maybe. We'll see. My work's very abstract, so I was like, I don't know. It's just gonna be a blob. That'll be the toy. So I was talking with this toy company, and because just to like get a quote of like, how expensive is it to make like a vinyl toy? Like, it could be abstract and then maybe I could like paint on it. I don't know. And it was expensive. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I could swing that. But it got me thinking about like, what would I do if I were to make a vinyl collectible? And the idea of Vibes came up. It's probably the most used word in my vocabulary. And it is so fitting for how I try to express emotion. Because I think sometimes when we use emotion, we're very singular in what that means. So like, you're really happy or you're really sad or you're incredibly tired. And sometimes I think we forget that those can compound. Like we could feel multiple things simultaneously. And I love the word vibe because that kind of captures the essence of, you know, the, I guess, emotional intelligence of being able to carry multiple emotions at the same time. So I have in my sketchbook, I posted a photo of it a few weeks ago of like this very rough sketch of what a vibe would look like. And the idea was it's kind of like a very like abstract form with like inset eyes. So like it wouldn't have any eyes added to it. It'd just be like a little indent. And then what I could do is either like hand paint them all, or like if I wanted to like make it a big thing, like each, I don't know, quarter or something have a different vibe. And so be like, oh, this is a good vibe, or this is a, like, I don't know, a fun vibe or something like that. And then I, like I said, I got the pricing of that and I was like, well, that's out the window. And I didn't realize mold costs were so expensive, which I get. I mean, it's definitely an art in itself. It's just a little out of my budget. So I was like, this is a great idea. I'm just going to sit on it and something else will make sense for it. And then a few months later, I was in, in a national park and just being inspired by all the different forms around me. I was like, oh, I should do a digital collection of vibes. Like, duh. I also didn't have my like paints or anything because you can't really fly with paints. So I just had my computer and we were camping. That's why I would have my computer in a national park. So I'll just go set the scene. And I started to make these abstract digital forms and also being inspired by what drives the Web3 space, which is pixelated art, 8-bit art. My husband and I have a CryptoPunk. That was the first NFT that we bought a couple of years ago. So a little bit of a nod to that, I decided to kind of pixelate these like blurry abstract forms. And the collection started to come to life. And then I started sharing it on X and then on Instagram. And it was really lovely how so many folks resonated with these vibes. And at first I was just gonna make stickers of them. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, like I'll do a little collection. And some folks wanted me to do a big collection. I was like, no, I want to do all of these individually. Like I don't want an algorithm to generate them. I want them to be generated by me. Not that there's anything wrong with an algorithm generating art. I've done it before. I just felt like for these, it was nice that I got to make them and they have like little errors and blemishes within all of them, just like my painting. So I really love them. I definitely want to make a plush toy. I started playing with AI and a really cute, it took a long time, like a good jillion outputs later and then a bit of Photoshop later. What I had in my mind came out as a plush toy, which is slightly more accessible price-wise to produce a limited edition of plush toys. So the last few days I've been reaching out to different places to see what that would look like. So I would like to make one of those and then fulfill on the bucket list of having a toy. So we'll see.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, my kids are obsessed. I have a daughter and a son, a 7 and 5-year-old, and they are obsessed with like plush dolls. So, and yeah, I think that would be so cool to have like little vibes, you know, colorful plush dolls. So look forward to see if you hopefully make that happen in the future.
Yeah. And, your art also adorns like a variety of products already. I went ahead and pinned 3 up to the top, which is the APTHCRY. I don't know if that's Apothecary, the socks, and then your collaboration with H&M Home, as well as your collaboration with Adidas, which is amazing. You've worked with brands like L'Oreal, Adidas, H&M, Caraway, but also wine, beer, and coffee companies. And I was wondering if you could share your advice on how to best identify and approach brand collaborations.
Yeah, I would say that's really how I've been able to start freelancing full time. So I guess a little history of me: went to college, graduated, worked full time as a designer and then art director, both in-house and at different agencies. And then over time was able to quit and start working for myself. And that was a little over 6 years ago. And that was because of commercial collaborations like these. And it pays off in a few ways. One, I love working with people, but I also like working by myself. So I get to do both when I get to work with different companies and be able to kind of bring a unified idea to life together, which is always really fun. But then also be able to see my work on different products that I probably otherwise wouldn't be able to, you know, self-fund and do myself. So it's really nice to have my work live on things that might be slightly more accessible. You know, not everybody can afford a limited edition print or painting, but, you know, folks might need socks, or they might need a new rug, or they might need, you know, coffee, but the artwork lives on that too. So you're able to bring artwork into somebody's life in a way that doesn't feel like too much of a stretch. So that's something that's always been important to me. So being able to collaborate with these brands, you know, kind of pays that forward as well. But to your actual question, advice. So when I first graduated college and I was freelancing on the side, I would do cold outreach to brands. And that was before Instagram was super prevalent in terms of brands being on social media. So I'd just find different brands in magazines and people on Craigslist, which is a slightly questionable practice, but you know, trial and error. And I just reach out to them and be like, hey, like, I want to work with you. And then slowly I started to get some client work. And then as Instagram became a lot more popular for brands to share their work on, my Instagram discover feed was filled with different like startup brands, women-owned brands, and then a lot of bigger brands too, that I felt like my aesthetic aligned with what they were doing. And I would just reach out and hope for the best. And that's still how I get a lot of my client work, is I reach out to different companies that I think would be a good fit. And sometimes you don't hear back. Sometimes it's a no. But a lot of times, even if it is a no, maybe a couple years later, that person I reached out to works at a different company and they're like, hey, remember me? So it's very much like me putting the energy out there for folks to work with me. And that's what I would encourage a lot of artists to do. Because when I was younger, I remember being in college and we'd have a lot of visiting designers and artists, and like the storyline was always the same, like, oh, companies would find me. And I'd be like, how? Like, how? Like, you were my age, there was barely an internet. Like, how did they find you? So like, how did you meet these people? And like, no one ever really like gave an answer. And then I just learned that if I couldn't figure out how people would find me, that I would find them. So that's my advice to people, is like, don't be afraid to like, put, you know, put your name out there, which is definitely the antithesis of a lot of Web3. A lot of people in Web3 say don't shill. But I think when it comes to client work, just like introducing yourself and be like, hey, if you have an opportunity, I'd love to work together. I think that is definitely more well received, like within the commercial world. Because a lot of times, coming from an art director's perspective, or if you don't have an art director, like a marketing manager's perspective, like you want to do something cool and innovative, but you know, you're already bogged down with your day-to-day work. And it's always nice to get an email from an artist that's thoughtful, being like, hey, if you have an opportunity, I'd love to do something. So I strongly recommend folks doing that. And worst case, you get a no or you don't get answers back. But I think the idea of like putting yourself out there instead of waiting for people to come to you kind of puts that good energy out into the world, and then eventually it'll come back to you.
Amazing, amazing advice. And I love the get it, go get it, ambitious, like I'm just going to put myself out there energy. So thank you for that advice. And I know that in addition to client work, you're also an Amazon associate, and you create video content on multiple platforms like IG and TikTok, but also on the Amazon pages itself. From a marketing and business perspective, can you share with other creators why you think it's important to first create process videos of your art, but then also mention the products that you are using?
That's a great question. And this is something that I still need to work on. So for Amazon in particular, I work with them to make videos that showcase the products that I use when I'm painting and showcasing my process. And a lot of those are voiceover. Whereas on Instagram and on TikTok, I've struggled with those resonating as much. I think that it could be me. Maybe my voice is boring. But it could also be that I do feel like Instagram and TikTok are slowly going in the way of like faster attention span. So you have to like capture someone within 2 seconds, and it like has to be like, you know, either a dopamine hit or kind of like scare you. I've had a lot of like jump scare reels recently in my feed. I'm like, well, I don't want to see this. This is terrifying. So my work doesn't really fall into that category, which is fine. But I would say that it's fun to show process. I don't think that you have to show your process as an artist. A lot of times I don't show my full process just because when I feel like I'm being filmed, even though I'm filming myself, I feel like someone's watching me and then I mess up the painting. So I think you could do it within reason. So I try to figure out ways where it feels comfortable for me, where like I could show certain parts and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to mess this up, even though I'm filming. That could also be informative. And I like that just because it shares the products that I use. It makes it a lot easier when people DM me being like, what paint is that? What paper is that? What tape is that? I could be like, here you go. It's all on this link. And yeah, I'll make a couple cents if you buy it from me, but you also don't have to. But if you do, thanks. It just saves me a lot of time. So I can just point people to the highlight with all the products I use versus them having to like individually go find it online every single time. But I like sharing it. I don't think that you have to as an artist if that's something that doesn't, spark joy. I love finding new art supplies and sharing what I've learned with others and vice versa. So this just makes it a little easier on social media to be able to do that.
Love that. And I think it's also another form of income. You know, it may not translate to like a massive amount, but it's definitely something that artists should consider, using as a tool in their toolbox.
Yeah, for sure. So Amber, one other thing I wanted to ask you about was, I'm a huge, Gary Vee fan, been consuming his content for a while, and actually consuming some of that content, reading some of the books is really what inspired me to start taking action on certain things that I'm passionate about, leaving the space of, even starting these spaces and creating artwork. So I know you, you worked, at VaynerMedia. I actually also met your husband there. So you spent some time, working, at Gary there, and you worked in a capacity as a designer, as an art director. So I would love to know a little bit more about, how was your experience, working for Gary in those roles at VaynerMedia?
Yeah, so I worked at Vayner from almost 10 years ago, from 2014 to 2016. And at the time, it was like a 300-person company, so not super big. My job before that, I was a designer at Victoria's Secret, which was a very big company. And I remember the things that stick out for me was when I was at Victoria's Secret, I was the youngest by a lot. I was like 22 to 24 when I worked there. And everyone else was my age currently, like 33, 34. Whereas at Vayner, everyone was my age, which was a nice shift. Not that it matters, a 10-year difference, but I definitely felt like people were like, oh, you're a kid. And I'm like, I understand I'm a kid, but like, can we still hang out? And then at Vayner, everyone was my age and everyone was down to hang out. And that was really nice. And it's funny because I'm still friends with a lot of folks at both places. But I just think that, when you're fresh out of college and everyone else has had kind of like a decade of work experience, it's hard to relate. And so that was the first thing I knew about Vayner, was just like, or recognized about Vayner. It's like, oh, everyone's like my age. This is cool. We're all just like experimenting and, seeing what works on social media. Also, when I worked there, it was before paid media was really a thing. Like, I remember Gary had an all hands about like paid media and how you could put paid dollars behind your content. And we were like, what? So that's kind of like setting the scene for like the time at which I worked there. It was really fun. I think that it was important for me because it taught me how to be scrappy. I think that there's a lot of like DIY energy, especially when we were doing photo shoots for different brands. Like, it wasn't this huge production. I mean, Vayner, I believe now has like, they do Super Bowl commercials, which are like legitimate productions. But back then, when you're making content for Facebook or Instagram and it's organic content and you don't have a huge budget, like, you figure out how to make it work and how to make it, aesthetically, visual to some or pleasing to someone that is like scrolling through their feed. And that lesson was really important to me because, working at Victoria's Secret, like, obviously they have a lot bigger production budgets, and to see how to work in a way that it doesn't need to be as like prim and proper, or like the process doesn't need to follow what one would think it should follow, was incredibly important to me. Because as a freelancer, you have to be scrappy. Like, you don't have huge, huge budgets to like take photos of the collaborations that you do. If you're lucky, the brand will take the photos for you. But if you're not, then you got to figure out how to make it look nice on your own. So that was a huge thing. I didn't work for Gary directly. I was as an art director, and then before that, a designer on one of the verticals for fashion and consumer packaged goods. So I haven't worked for Gary directly, but I remember back then he would, I don't know if he still does this, but he would meet with every single new hire. So that was really exciting. And I remember the day I interviewed, so before I got the job, I was reading, I think he was like on like Inc. magazine's cover. And I was reading the article because I had no idea who he was. The reason why I even interviewed there is a friend of mine from college worked there. And she's like, yeah, I think you'd like it. Like, it's a cool vibe. And I was like, sure. Okay. And I was reading this magazine waiting to be interviewed. I'm like, maybe I should have done more research on this guy. But I was like, whatever. And in the article, he was talking about how you shouldn't post, which in hindsight, a decade later, duh. But he's like, you shouldn't post the same content on every single platform. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, we're only human and there's like 1,000 social media platforms now. But back then I was like, oh, that's really interesting that like the platform is part of the medium in which like you make or share something. And that really was interesting to me. I was like, oh, I never really even thought about it that way. I mean, back then it was literally like Facebook and Instagram. So there wasn't much, but and Twitter. And yeah, I was like, oh, this could be a really cool place to learn from. And I'm really glad that I worked there because that's what taught me how to do social media as a freelancer. So yeah, I could go on and on. It was awesome to work there. I mean, but caveat that it was also an agency. And I feel like anyone that's worked at an agency anywhere, you know, you have very long hours, you have to be very flexible with your time. And you know, that part is tough. I don't think that's unique to VaynerMedia. If anything, Vayner was probably more of a work-life balance than the agencies that friends of mine had worked at. But, you know, as I grew older, I was like, yeah, if I'm going to put in all this time, I'd rather just do it for myself versus someone else. I love Gary, but I love me more. So that's really what birthed the idea of like, yeah, okay, maybe I'll go freelance. And then after I left Vayner, I worked at Avon for like a year and a half. And that was more of a proper like 9-to-5 web design job. And then that's how I had a lot of time back to be able to do stuff on my own.
That's awesome. And I love that at first, you know, you didn't even know who he was and just looking him up in the magazine before the interview. And but no, that's so cool that you learned there. And then you decided to kind of like, all right, I want to do, you know, more for myself, right? Versus than working the long hours for somebody else. And you were hitting a little bit on, you know, so it's like some of those lessons learned from Gary in terms of like, you know, adapting your content for different platforms. And obviously, that experience there probably taught you a lot. I was curious now as like as you transitioned into like a full-time freelancer and artist, how has your like approach to social media marketing and promotion like evolved over the years?
It's definitely changed. I would say that like when I first started working for myself in 2017, TikTok was definitely not a thing. Instagram kind of co-opted Snapchat with stories by that point. But it's very static imagery still. So like carousels and single posts. And that was really easy for me because I would just share my artwork and then write a little bit about the artwork and then it would do well. And then over time, as video became more prevalent, it's still something that I struggle with, but I've kind of come to peace with the fact that it's like, I don't need to have continual growth in terms of a follower count. I'd rather just connect with people that resonate with my work and that have been, you know, collecting from me or following my work or like we've become friends over the years. I'd rather just focus on those folks. So it's definitely harder for me to even share like what I've learned because I think now I'm not leaning into that as much. When I first started, I was like, oh, I got to get my name out there. I got to get my work out there. And obviously you could do that infinitely. There are billions of people on this planet. But at a certain point, I realized that it's like, do I want to be sharing my work because it's my work or do I want to transform my work into content so more people follow me? And I've realized that the former is something that sits with me better. That's obviously hard because you are a freelancer and you need to find work. So again, that's where I kind of lean into just doing cold outreach to work with different people and different brands instead of morphing my work into content. But I have a lot of artist friends that have hired social media managers that kind of take that on and then, you know, transform their work into digestible content. So I think Vayner has taught me to find that balance you know, like sometimes some clients really wanted to push and they're like, we want to have as many followers as humanly possible. And there are other clients that are like, well, we just want to have a presence and, you know, have a place for people to connect with us and learn about what we make. So that really taught me that there's definitely a range in terms of what you do on social. So for me, I focus most on X, and this changes to month to month, quarter to quarter. I focus most on X just because I feel like I'm actually talking to people, you know, especially in DMs or comments, like people are chatting with me and like that feels more natural. Whereas Instagram has become a lot more like a broadcast situation, similar to YouTube. Sometimes I do shorts, sometimes I've done YouTube videos, but it doesn't spark that much joy. But it feels more broadcasting. So it kind of feels like I'm shouting into the void and hoping people hear me, which I enjoy a little bit less. And then similar on LinkedIn and on TikTok, it feels more broadcasting. And I feel like X is one of the few, you know, even though it's glitchy and like you get scam ads all the time, it feels more like you're able to talk to and with people versus kind of talk at people. And my hope is that the future of social media will be more like that. So similar to like Discord chats or there are a few other platforms like Discord, I'm forgetting the names of them, or even like on X where you feel like it's more like a conversation and less, you know, just shouting into the void, like, look at my artwork and like it. Thank you. So I don't know if that's really a strategy, but that's what I do. That's my long-winded way of being like, I'm trying to figure it out too. There are definitely strategic ways. I think like if you're trying to grow on Instagram within the first 3 to 4 seconds of the reel, you're going to want to have like copy in the reel and you're going to want to have a hook and then you're going to want to keep people interested throughout the whole reel and then like have a payoff in the end. So like that's how you do it. But then it's like, do I really want to do that? Mm-hmm. Like, no. So sometimes, yeah, if I have an idea and it just follows that cadence and it does well, like great. But I don't want to change how I share my work for that unless I really want to grow. Who knows? You might talk to me in 6 months and be like, yeah, that was garbage. We're all about growth. So, you know, I think you have to just be okay with the fact that like not every platform you're going to have a bajillion followers. And as long as you are able to connect with people in like a meaningful way, I think that's more important than the number of people that come before the word follower. So,
yeah, no, I love that. It's a very thoughtful, you know, answer as well. And I think, you know, you made that point about like, you know, giving a little more importance to like the connection part, right? And you know, the interaction versus the broadcast and also not having to kind of like, you know, kind of staying true to yourself, right? And how you're creating and putting your art out there as opposed to just kind of like adapting things just to get follower growth, right? So no, I appreciate that answer. And it's very insightful as well to learn more about that.
And in addition to everything that you just shared about all the different platforms, you're also on Revel XYZ, which is a SoFi app that I've actually enjoyed using quite a bit. In fact, you were one of the first artists that I saw that early adopted it. And although many in Web3 have joined, there's still many who have hesitated for whatever reason. When a new platform like Revel comes along, how do you know that it's something you want to be a part of?
That's a great question. I think for Revel in specific, they reached out to me to work with them. And I was like, sure, this is interesting. I think a big part of my practice is like experimentation and play. And that lives beyond just the art making itself. So for them in specific, I worked with them in the beginning and I really enjoy it. Our partnership has ended since, but I really love sharing my work on there and being able to collect work from other folks. I find Revel in particular pretty interesting because, I mean, this is just me, my thoughts, but like, I feel like a platform like an Instagram or an X maybe would hopefully, you know, like buy them or like, you know, use them as reference for what they should do. Because I think a lot of creators are putting out so much work and so much effort and outside of Web3 and, you know, don't get compensated for it at all. Like, yes, you have a big follower account and then I guess you could parlay that into partnerships, but that's a grind. And it would just be nice, like, you know, if people could somehow outside of like the tipping or the gifting situation, which I know Instagram and TikTok have, but I don't fully understand because I'm old. Something that feels more sustainable for creators. And I think Revel hits on that pretty well. And it's just fun. So that has been really fun to experiment with and play on. But outside of that, I'd say, like, outside of partnerships, looking for new platforms to experiment on, I think that if it's fun, like if I spend my time on there and I'm like, yeah, that didn't feel like a waste, like I'll give it a whirl. But if it feels like work and it doesn't feel enjoyable, then that's usually when I'll start to, you know, pass on an opportunity, or if it's not a partnership and it's just an app that I'm discovering organically, like I'll pass on that. Like TikTok, for example, I started a TikTok in 2019 because everyone that I'm friends with at Vayner was like, you need a TikTok. It's the opportunity for attention. I was like, okay, here we go. And I made one and then I posted a couple things and it flopped. And I was like, well, it's kind of fun to watch. Spent 4 hours of my day watching this TikTok thing. So for better or worse. And then I did a video of me narrating my sketchbook and it like took off. And I was like, oh, I see why people love TikTok, because you gain 30,000 followers from one video. And that gave me pause. I was like, I was like, are we all here because this is fun? Or are we all here because we want to gain a gajillion followers in from one post? So that's when I started to kind of fade off of that. I will post on TikTok every now and then, and I will unfortunately watch TikTok for hours on end every now and then. But yeah, it's usually a gut instinct for me. It's like, if this is enjoyable, I'll play around with it, partnership or otherwise. But if it's not enjoyable, then, you know, I'd rather spend my time elsewhere.
I think that's so great. And it's such an important message to go with your gut and have that inform where it is that you're going to direct your attention. And I really do enjoy your work on Revel, because it's like a behind the scene look into what you do. So I get the cards because I locked up one of your sets, and it's like, oh, it's cool. You know, I get to get this other almost side of you over there, which has been really fun. And also, in addition to this, I did see that post that you made on IG that you've been using AI to imagine a plushie with your art style on it. I'm going to look for that and pin it up to the top because it's so cute. Like, I love it. I would definitely buy it. I know my daughter would freak out having that. Apart from that fun experiment that you did with AI and the plushie, have you used AI to help you with workflow or for creative inspiration? And if so, has that experience with AI been a positive and helpful one?
Yeah, so probably like 6 months ago, I started to share a lot of the AI work that I've been tinkering with over the year prior, which was a lot of like abstract installation work. I studied sculpture when I was in college, and I loved the idea of doing like really big installations, but those are also expensive. And I think the overarching theme for me and my experience with AI is it helps. It's a tool that helps me envision things that I otherwise couldn't afford to envision, whether that's like physical labor, or like I don't have the ability to build it, or the finances to build it, and then I could create it and put it out in the world and then maybe find someone to work with me on bringing it to life. So that had been really exciting. So every time I have an idea where I'm like, ah, it'd be better if this were rendered, and I don't, you know, I can't, you know, swing having a toy made, but I can make an AI version of it and put it out to the world and see if I could figure out a way. That's been really helpful. I also use it a lot of time to kind of like fancify my copy for a lot of things. So like, I'm a very short-winded writer. And I love that aspect of my writing and my style. But sometimes things need a little bit more like flower to them. So I'll use AI to help me with that. And I think it's just been great. It's a really nice way to kind of like sketch and ideate and put ideas out there. With that said, like, it sometimes could also be really difficult. When I was working on this plush AI example to send to potential manufacturers, some of the plushes that I got were scary, like not like ugly, but like scary. And I was like, the vibe is not scary. So, you know, you have to have patience with it. It's so much better than it was like a couple years ago. I remember playing with like Dolly and trying to do these abstract sculptures, and I knew what they were, but I would show my husband and he'd be like, what am I looking at? And I'm like, crap, we're not there yet. And then Midjourney came along and it was able to make a realistic landscape setting with an abstract sculpture in the landscape setting. And I was like, see, that's what Dali was doing, but I knew what it was, but you didn't, but now you do. So I think that AI will continually be able to be more of like an assistant, which I think is amazing. So if that lives beyond your sketchbook, like, yes, could I have sketched out this plush doll? Sure. But now it's a lot more solid. So when I share this with somebody else, they know exactly what I'm looking for versus my sketch of it, which would be a lot more abstract. So I love using AI. I remember when I first started sharing my AI pieces on Instagram, I was really nervous because a lot of artists that I love and that I follow on Instagram are very against artificial intelligence in a way that, like, if they feel that like AI is taking jobs from artists. What I found interesting over the last few years too is that they hated that, but then they would love when AI would do something that they felt was beneficial. I was just reading an article about how someone is using AI to sort different types of fabrics, to recycle those fabrics versus putting them in a landfill. And a lot of artists that I follow are like, this is amazing. This is what AI should be used for. And I was like, okay, so it's okay to take someone else's job, but it's not okay to take your job. So that's something that I find interesting. That's definitely a little bit of a hot take, but I'm like, I don't think AI is going to take jobs. It's similar to how computing, it just evolves people's jobs. So like, you know, back when you were a designer, back in like the 60s and 70s and 80s, like a lot of it was printmaking focused and printing press focused. And now it's more digitally focused. And, you know, people born like my age, you know, yeah, we just design on the computer. We didn't do layouts by hand. Like, even though I learned how to do that, I was like, never. But that's how it used to be. That was the norm. And then the norm changed. And I think that's what's happening with AI as well. So I was, needless to say, I was terrified to share my AI stuff on my Instagram. But then I was like, whatever, people could yell at me. It's fine. It's not the first time. So I started to share it on Instagram and a lot of people resonated with it. They're like, wow, oh, okay. I could see how I could use AI to kind of push the ideas that I've had in my brain that I couldn't really put on paper on my own. I could put that out there now. So I think that that helped hopefully start change the narrative a little bit, just because there are so many people that are still very hesitant about it. And that's natural. I feel like, you know, it's, you know, the human nature is to be a little bit, you know, questionable about things that we're not fully knowledgeable on. And I get that. Don't love the anger behind it, but I'm very, very pro using AI to help envision things that I otherwise couldn't envision or do on my own. So this toy is a great example. I've been able to like send this image to a bunch of different manufacturers and get a more accurate quote than if I were to sketch it out myself and be like, high pile, long pile hair, rainbow. And they'd be like, what? So I could show them this and get a little bit more of an exact quotation from them. So I love it. A lot of people don't agree with me on that. That is okay. And that's the world. But I think that it's been really helpful to kind of help me dream beyond the limitations that I've set for myself.
Oh, amazing. 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 I'm actually an AI artist. I use ChatGPT just for workflow purposes. And it's really wonderful to hear non-anger or like a take that is productive and positive. So I love it. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah, great take. So switching subjects a little bit, I was going to mention, so my I have a five-year-old son, Alex, who is completely obsessed with snakes, like to the point where for his birthday last year, he had us bring snakes to his house so that he could hold and we could all like pet them and all that. So he's like completely obsessed with it, has all sorts of favorite snakes, tells people about it. I noticed that you have a snake tattoo on your right forearm, and you've actually shared a couple of posts mentioning that you also really love snakes. And so I was wondering if that particular tattoo had any special significance for you, if you could share more about that.
As you were talking about your son with snakes, I was gonna be like, I have a snake tattoo. But yeah, I love snakes. We were staying at a few years ago, like at a hotel, and they had like, I don't know, someone that cared for endangered snakes come and you could have the snakes on your arm. And my husband was like, no. And yep. I was like, yes, give me all the snakes. And I was like, what are they going to do? They're tiny. And there weren't big snakes. I'm not putting like a, I mean, I would, but I've never encountered a snake longer than me. So, you know, that hasn't happened yet, but I love them. And so the tattoo in particular, all my tattoos have different meanings that aren't obvious in terms of what they are, but I love that snakes will shed their skin. And I think that for the tattoo meaning in particular, kind of ties back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like you change as you grow older. And so that was more of like a visual reminder for me to be like, yes, it's okay to change and kind of like shed the older version of you as you grow into the newer version of you. So that's what that means to me in particular on that tattoo. But also I love snakes. And at first I thought you said your son loves steaks. And I was like, I mean, yeah, that's cool. I do too. I wouldn't have a birthday party around them, but that's awesome. But I do. And a lot of my Vibes characters actually, so all the Vibes figures are inspired by nature, whether it's, you know, different like flora or, you know, different types of like animals, but a lot of them are very snake inspired to the point where I was like, are these too many that are inspired by snakes? I was like, no such thing. I just really, I love the forms that they make. Now that we live in LA, there are a lot of snakes in Los Angeles, which can give you a jump scare, you know, if you see one and you're not expecting one. That's why I like rattlesnakes. They rattle and they let you know that they're there before you see them and then you can step away. But I think snakes are really beautiful and I love them.
So cool. Yeah, no, it's funny. You thought it was steaks. Actually, my daughter does love steaks, the food. But yeah, my son's definitely obsessed with snakes. And that was so cool. It's really cool to learn about the symbolism and the message behind the snake and the whole like shedding of your skin and it being okay to change and evolve as we get older. So thank you for sharing that with us.
So about a little bit more about you, since we just covered like the significance of your snake tattoo, as I researched your website, I feel like I quickly realized that you are an and person instead of an or person. Like you offer prints, original artwork, you've created even artisanal products on Etsy that I found, which I thought were amazing. And then there's all of this digital art and content that you create. Why do you think it's important to have an and mentality instead of an or mentality? And do you think that personally your artistic career has benefited from that mindset that you have?
Wow, that's a great question. No one's asked me that before. I would say I reserve the or mindset for my time. So it's like I could be doing this in this hour or I could be doing this because I cannot multitask as much as I would like to think I can. I can't. Can't walk and look at my phone at the same time. I have, and I've like fallen off the sidewalk and it's not fun. Maybe that's just aging. But I would say, so I reserve an or mindset for the protection of my time, which I think is important. And when it comes to making art, I know we were talking about a little bit earlier. I feel like the narrative is very much to have a singular style and to, you know, make a singular thing over and over and over and over again. And that's how you become an expert. And there's nothing wrong with that process at all. I think that's the mainstream process that a lot of artists take. And they dive into one topic and they just continually iterate on that topic over and over again. But for me, I think that the practice of making art, regardless of what that art looks like, is the same thing. It's just that the output might look a little different. And that to me is more important. I think that my art is definitely a trail of who I've been or like, you know, me leaving behind the snake skin as we talked about earlier. And as long as I'm making art, that's what's important to me. And I think that like, you know, as far as I know, we only live once. So I would hate to kick myself later down the line and be like, oh, why didn't I try to make a plush toy? Or, oh, why didn't I try to write a book? Or, you know, why didn't I try to paint something really big or experiment with this? I'd rather just experiment with it. And if it brings me joy, I'll continue to do it. Or if, you know, the cycle of that kind of has ended, then I'll let it end. A good example is I did a lot of like beaded glass bracelets last year. And I loved making them. I called them like Vittoria bracelets because my last name in Italian means victory. And I thought that was a really nice sentiment to have on a bracelet. But after like sitting hunched, making like 100 something of them, I was like, oof, I don't know if I can do this for much longer. And then that's where I pivoted to make like hair tie bracelets, which hopefully those will be arriving in the mail in a few days or week. So, you know, I just kind of let things come to their natural end if they do. And then I move on to the next thing that interests me. And, I think a lot of artists do that. I think it's just a lot of us are kind of nervous to share that because it breaks the aesthetic of our Instagram feed, or it breaks, you know, the box other people have put us in. And I think that you just, as long as you're doing what brings you joy, that's the most important thing. I don't think you need to worry too much about, you know, if you easily fit into the description that someone else gives you. So that's helped me. It's allowed me to, you know, keep myself interested and not get bored by my own work. And I think that is the most important thing for me. So I get to pay off on that by experimenting.
Excellent. And I think you're an example of how that doesn't stop you from being profitable. In fact, the way that I see it is it has led to you being profitable because it's you showing your most authentic self. And that's why I think collectors and people just resonate so much with you.
Oh, thanks.
I agree. Oh, and Amber, can you tell us about maybe any upcoming projects or goals that you have for your art career?
Yeah, I mean, I want to get that plush toy made. So send out the good vibes for that, not costing a gajillion dollars. Beyond that, I have over the last few months collaborated with an artist. His name's Kelly Milligan. He lives in New Zealand and he's a generative artist. And we have worked together on a generative collection where, I don't know, he digested my work better than I would. He was noticing all these details about my work that were just very much like inherent to who I am and was able to put that into code. I tweeted this morning, my GM tweet was actually like a video from his house of like, he has a digital display screen thing. I forget who made it. Everyone asks me and I'm like, I don't know. It's not my house. I'm just jealous. And it has one of the pieces on there. And I'm really excited for that collection to come out. Hopefully within the next few months, I think that'll be out. So that's upcoming. And in terms of like my career long term, I really love collaborating with other people. I think that was a big thing for me last year. And we're seeing a little bit more of that with my drop with Kelly in a few months. But to be able to continue to make art and connect with people over art, whether it's my art or other people's artwork, is definitely the biggest thing for me. And as long as I keep, you know, making things that feel true to who I am, then I will be a happy camper.
Oh, I love that. And can't wait to see the new collection in the next few months. And, you know, I was just thinking like, man, maybe you need to do like a Kickstarter or something for this, you know, plush toys, you know, something where you say like, all right, you
put my- yeah.
And, you know, I'll be able to produce this stuff and get it out there. So.
I know. I think that there are a few manufacturers where like I'd be able to like swing an edition of 100 of them on my own, which is great. There's just one quote that I got yesterday that I was like, oh my goodness, I get it. I get it. I don't like, I never like, you know, questioning the value of someone else's work, but I was like, well, that was a lot more than I allotted for. So I definitely think it'll be doable. It's just hopefully we can get it as close to looking as that my little mock-up as possible because I love it and I want it to exist. So we'll see. But yeah, that's the goal for this year, to hopefully get that, you know, out into the world. And if not, maybe next year. But I really do love that plushie, and that's been on the larger bucket list of mine for a while. It would be nice to be able to do that for myself. So we'll see.
Well, we'll be manifesting it for you, Amber.
100%. I would love to see that come to life. And I went ahead and found that GM tweet and posted it to the top because that is, goodness, that's a lovely display. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. And it captures your art just gorgeous.
Yeah, I'll have to ask him where he got it. He's told me like 5 times. And I always forget. But yeah, working on that with Kelly was amazing. Like, as we start to share more of the pieces of the collection, he really noticed things like the texture in my painting, but then also the gradients. So how gradients are usually blended in the physical world are very different than how they're blended on the computer. And he was able to, he explained it to me and I just nodded and smiled because I was like, cool, I have no idea how you did this, but thank you. And he was able to figure out how to have them blend more similarly to how paint would blend versus how digital pixels and hex values would blend. So that's why, even though this is moving and this is fully digital, it looks like colors that I would paint and how they would blend if I painted them. And then also how not all of the, in this case, they're squares, but some of them output as rectangles, how not all of them are perfect. Because when I paint by hand, even though I'm measuring out different rectangles, when I tape them off, I'm keeping it a little bit more organic because I like those blemishes in my work. I think it, you know, reminds us when we're looking at something so geometric and something that we attribute to being quote unquote perfect, isn't. He picked that up and put that in the code. And I don't know how, but it was really incredible to be able to work with him. So I'm excited for that to come out soon. And yeah, it's just fun to be able to work with other people on a unified idea.
Yeah, that is super cool. And super fun to see the way that he was able to like really understand and execute the vision. It's stunning. So kind of switching gears a little bit, we like to ask towards the tail end of the interview some, you know, more personal questions. What do you enjoy doing outside of art?
I like going for walks. You know, there's that meme that was like the rich mom walk, and you don't need to be a mom to go on the rich mom walk. I do that every morning. Everyone in LA does that. I mean, most people have dogs, so they take their dog for a walk. But like, I just take myself for a walk every morning. So I love going for walks. I love going to national parks. They definitely inspire a lot of my work, even though it's not very overt. Love reading. Haven't read as much as I'd like to. Also love watching Netflix shows. I know that that's probably not the most glamorous hobby, but I love television. I'm definitely not a TV or film snob, especially living in LA. Not even on the level of most people. But I don't know. I just like seeing art in different forms, and I feel like on TV it's been really nice to just, you know, watch TV, even if it's reality television. I think that's an art form in itself.
I agree, and I definitely gravitate towards it as like my guilty pleasure. So and oddly enough, I actually am also one of the walkers of this world who enjoys walking. I sometimes walk twice a day, usually clock in about 5 miles. And every time I go out, I have a special tree friend that he's huge. He's got to be like 200 years old. It's beautiful oak that I hug. So I also draw inspiration from nature just into my life, but also into my work. So we share that in common, Amber.
That's awesome. I don't know the age of the trees here. That's so nice. There's some sea lions that sometimes I'll walk by if they decide to make themselves known in the marina, which is really nice. They're very loud. So, but a tree is so nice. I love trees. I'm an air sign, so I feel like I grab, even though I'm allergic to like a gajillion trees, I still love trees. So
I have allergies for trees too, and I still hug them. I don't care. And I'm also an air sign. By any chance, what air sign are you?
I'm a Gemini.
Oh my God, I'm a Gemini too.
Wait, when's your birthday?
May 25th.
Oh, nice. That's close to my mom's birthday. I'm in June. I'm June 3rd. So very close. That's awesome. But yeah, I know. I'm like, I love trees. Questionable trees love me, which is fine. But yeah, I feel like, you know, going on walks is the best thing. I read on Instagram, so, you know, like take that as a grain of salt, that like taking yourself on a, you know, moving your body. So it doesn't have to be a walk, but like moving your body for like 20 minutes a day. It really helps with the mental health. So I'm like, well, I'll use that as an excuse to go on a walk. Why not?
I love that. I'm here laughing at you guys talking about the walks and both being Gemini. It's so great. What was I going to say? And the other thing too, I know, Amber, you recently went to like Dry Tortuga. So you were talking about like national parks. I was curious, how was your trip out there?
I love Dry Tortugas National Park. It is definitely a tougher one to get to. It's also the most expensive national park to get to, according to Google. Because you have to take a boat over, and it's like a 2-hour boat ride there and a 2-hour boat ride back. It's like off the coast of Key West. It's like kind of in the Gulf of Mexico. And we camped, which is really nice. And it's just hard to be able to get into the lottery to be able to camp. We put in for, it's funny, we went to Art Basel in 2022. And my husband saw the opening. He's like, oh, for 2023, like, you'll definitely get another gig at Art Basel. We'll go to Dry Tortugas beforehand. And then I didn't get a gig at Art Basel. And I was like, but I still want to go to Dry Tortugas. So we did that. And then we went home for an early Christmas. But it was really fun to camp there. You can only have like 10 people camping at a time on the island, and it was really beautiful. It used to be an old fort, Fort Jefferson, I believe is the name of it. And the United States built the fort because I guess when we were back in time, you know, shipping goods from the coast of the United States into more central United States, they wanted to protect that area. So that's why it was a fort, and they protected the waters mainly around the island as part of the national park. So I loved it. Not the easiest. I mean, if you're really fancy, you can like take a seaplane to go for the day and then fly back. But that was really, really expensive. And we also wanted to camp. And but there are many ways to get there. Just it's not as affordable as the other national parks. But I'm glad we got to go because that was the third and last park in Florida that we had not been to. And the other two are Everglades and Biscayne, which are also both really beautiful. So it was nice to be able to see that one when we could.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you guys still decided to do it, even though something didn't turn out for Art Basel this past December. So that's awesome. And I did want to just mention to folks, I mean, if it was maybe a couple of people that did want to come up and ask a question or just let us know how you're doing, feel free to request. We can take maybe a couple people. And other thing I wanted to ask you, this is something we also usually ask most of our guests, that you did mention you're not like a very, like a you know huge movie buff, even though you're out in LA, but we do like to know what you would consider to be like your top three favorite movies of all time.
Oh, top three? Say Barbie is an incredible movie. So that's definitely up there. I also love Pixar. So Finding Nemo, I feel like the colors in that film, I know that like you watch it back now and how technology has evolved, it's not as like incredible as it was when you first watched it when it came out, but I just feel like the storytelling and the colors of Finding Nemo are really incredible. And then a third movie, I think when I was a kid, I really loved The Lion King, so that's what's coming to mind. I guess even though I'm like gonna be 34, I'm still mentally like 12. I think that those three are really stunning. I also just love animation or anything that's very artful, especially the Barbie film. All the sets were built like very nostalgic to how they used to film, you know, several decades ago. So anything that's very like artful like that, I tend to really love.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I mean, definitely I'm a huge fan of also like all the Pixar movies, and, you know, Finding Nemo is like one of those at the top of the list. And also like growing up, I was also like, I used to like love all like the, you know, whatever Disney would release like the movie every year, you know, but yeah, Lion King was definitely like a top favorite growing up, at, you know, and even like then, like watching it with my kids now, I get to like relive the whole thing again. So those are some great classics there. And I see we have Wildy up on stage. Hey, Wildy, how are you?
Hi, I love this space so much. Like, I'm usually, you know, you tune in and out of spaces, but I've been here working in the background and just listening. I admire Amber so much. And of course, love you guys. You guys have the best spaces, like the questions you prepare so much. And I love it. And it's more like a, you know, giving, you know, we say flowers to Amber, because I think when people ask me like, oh, you know, what do you like about Web3? And it's this, the connections that we can make with artists that have, you know, history in doing this professionally longer than we have. I just started, and I know that I just learned so much from you, Amber, and like, you're so good, like answering DMs or whatever, like this is like so important, having this network and this community. And yeah, I totally relate to like Instagram, and yeah, it's hard. It's so hard to market. ourselves as an artist in these social media platforms. But I think you expressed how, you know, it's important not to look at the numbers, but then you need the numbers if you're doing this freelance and that battle. But I found comfort in you saying, like, to do what makes you happy, because I do notice when artists do post things that bring happiness, they're the ones that resonate the most with other people anyway. But yeah, just saying thank you. I'm hoping the plushie gets made. He's adorable. Let's see what happens. I am waiting for it. And yeah, I'm just excited for everything that you're doing and so inspired by you.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Hey, Prima. It's nice having you up on stage. I'm such a huge fan of Weave D. Like, I'm going to fangirl right now. But I had the great pleasure, Giancarlo also, of meeting her in this last Miami Art Basel. And I'll share it with you guys. I'm sure Amber would appreciate the story. But my daughter is also an artist, and she very much loves her curly hair and is very much into fashion as well. So, you know, like how we all, and you just hit on that with the about the importance of network, the importance of knowing that there are other people who are going through similar things as you. But in my daughter's particular case, the importance of representation. And so they actually got to meet each other. Like she was like, mommy, when am I going to meet the lady who's also Dominican and has curly hair and is an artist? And we managed to make that happen, and we got a picture of the two of them together, and it was so freaking cute. They actually unintentionally were wearing the same colors even, so it almost felt like it was like a moment meant to be. So I had a just quick shout out Weedley and throw her flowers as well.
Oh, I love that story. You need to pin the photo. I mean, you don't need to, but I want to send it to me after. That's so cute.
It's the sweetest moment. I think I said it's the highlight of like Art Basel for me, because like, oh my God, it's the next, you know, generation. And obviously we all do this work of representation, and as women, as minorities too, as Latinas, like the whole point of this, right? Like the big why is so other people can feel like they can do it too and feel celebrated. And that's how you make me feel too, Amber, just trying to circle it back. And I love you guys and such an awesome space. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much for coming up, Wildy. And yeah, that moment was, I'm so glad you shared that, Jenny, because that was such a like cool and special moment. Man, it was a beautiful thing. And it really speaks a lot to that point that like representation and, you know, having people there that like, you know, doing something that looked like you, that, you know, to feel yourself kind of represented, to make it feel possible, you know, I think is such an important thing. So I love that. I love that we got to meet Wildy. That was so cool as well. So, you know, thank you for coming up and just sharing, you know, some flowers for Amber and talking with us today.
Oh my God, the photo is so cute. I love it.
All right.
It's adorable. All right. I don't see we have any other speakers. Maybe one last thing I was going to ask before we wrap up. We have Wildy here as well, and my partner, Curtis, down on the stage. So you did do that. One of the collaborations, you know, Jenny talked a lot about, you know, all the different collaborations and partnerships and things that you've done. You recently did one with Coin Coffee around getting, you know, your artwork displayed on a package of coffee. I was maybe hoping if you could share a little bit about what that partnership in particular meant to you.
I love coffee. Like, I probably love it a little too much. And it that kind of like the overarching bucket list thing that I've had. One of them was to have art on a coffee label. And so it was really nice to work with Coin Coffee, because it was, you know, not only me, but like, you know, a bunch of us that we got to all have our artwork out together. And, you know, and something, again, that's useful. I think it kind of pays back to something that's important to me of like, you know, not everyone can afford art, but that doesn't mean that not everyone deserves art in their life. And a lot of people drink coffee, and I use need in terms of like, is coffee a need? No, but it is a need. And, you know, might need coffee in their life. And then this is something where you can get something that you need, or like you buy on a regular basis that also has artwork attached to it that, you know, visually brings you joy. So I was really honored to be able, you know, to work with Coin Coffee and to see my work on a a comfy bag. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, and I would argue it is a need for some of us.
100%. I'm a full ogre if I don't have coffee.
Yeah. People don't want to interact with me before I've had my coffee. So I think for some of us it is. And you know, it's coffee for me is like something that, yeah, like it goes way back to like my roots, you know, family experiences and all that. And again, just being able to, you know, enjoy a nice cup of coffee while also admiring some art. I mean, there's just something really like special and magical about that. So I thought it was so cool that, yeah, you did partner with us working with Coin Coffee, and we were able to do that partnership. And I had the opportunity to like sit down and enjoy some of the Guatemalan blend that is now, you know, featuring your artwork as well. So I thought that was such a cool partnership.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you for that opportunity. I was so excited, and it's been so nice to see it out into the world. And you know, yeah, I was like, yes, life goal check.
Let's go. All right. Well, I do got to bring the space to a closure. Amber, it has been an absolute pleasure, you know, just having you here today, getting to learn a little bit more about you, about your artwork, about all the amazing things that you've done already in your career. Hopefully the other amazing things you will do in the future, you know, new drops, new collections, plushy toys, you know, it's going to happen, I'm sure. And just keep putting it out in the universe. But yeah, it's just been an absolute pleasure having you here. So thank you so much for coming today as our guest. And also a big thanks to everybody that was in the space today. And Willie, you for coming up to speak with us as well. It's much, much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Thank you, Amber. Thanks everyone else that was here. Hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day.